Live from New York, it's the Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null. Nice to have you with us today. If you care about your heart, we're going to show you how to have it live a longer life. University of Miami and Columbia University. We're also going to look at simple things, things we can do that are really elementary. For example, do you know that if you have a high coronary calcium score, which is easy and inexpensive to determine, that could signal an increase of the risk of cancer, kidney, and lung disease? Johns Hopkins University. We're also going to explore the idea that everyone can make important decisions. But there's what's called the Harman's hypothesis. Harman's hypothesis occurred back in 1956 when Denham Harman talked about what he called oxidative hypothesis, meaning that we age, we create disease when we have excessive free radicals damage. And he was right. And Spanish National Cancer Research Center in Spain was able to prove this. So this will give you a whole new understanding. Also from the Mayo Clinic, cut the carcinogen in your French fries and reduce inflammation and feel better could be as close as your next meal, University of Missouri, and a lot more on health and healing. Then two very unique articles. One is in the Greater Good, How Happy Brains Respond to Negative Things, by Summer Allen and Jeremy Adam Smith. And from Psychology Today, Dr. Joe Herbert, stress interferes with the rhythm of life. I'll explain why that matters, meaning disrupting your daily rhythms has serious consequences for your brain. Also today, we've been told that we need to literally bankrupt the country, which is already bankrupt, that's redundant, in order to protect us against terrorists. Fair enough. Let's say we have a real threat. Nobody wants to get blown up. But then let's be practical. Let's just calm down and take an honest look at what's really killing us. Not just today. Let's go back a while. Let's take an honest look from official government statistics at the real causes of death over the last 30 years. And then I want to show you where terrorist attacks occur in that. And yet we're spending more money fighting terrorism than we are each year fighting cancer, heart disease, diabetes, and obesity combined. So is it worth it? I'll explore that. Also today, continuing our commentaries from Remarkable Minds, Chris Hedges, Truth Dig, The Graveyard of the Elites, and something I've wanted to get to for a while but have not had time, I will today. It's time to stop supporting our troops if they are supporting the killing of innocent people. This is from Joshim Hagopian. And also, I Don't Want to Conquer the World by Timothy Gado from Countercurrents. This you're going to find really insightful because he simply raises some points that are so meaningful to us, and yet we're overlooking it about why we're in the mess we're in today. Then from our audio files today, from people who are making statements I believe we can learn from, the most important video never played on TV. And I'll show you an audio clip, a part of it, about 9/11 and going to war. Then, if time permits, a woman, Shannon Cartmell, who did research on vaccines, she was not pro or anti-vaccine. She merely wanted to know what does the actual scientific research shows. Also, for all of the people in this audience who believe the official history of World War II, there's more to that story, and we'll play you a very important clip on that. And everything we warned has become our reality. It's just 5 minutes to listen to some prophetic statements made 60 years ago, how it's all true today. So we have a lot to share today. Let's get right to it. First up, we're going to look at something that is right in front of us, our hearts every day. Most people never take the time to go into a deep meditation and so they can actually hear their heartbeat. A healthy heart has a lot of ingredients that go into making it heart healthy. Exercising every day, that strengthens your heart, improves microcirculation. Having certain spices like cayenne and chili peppers, jalapeno, that thins the blood. It does what an aspirin does, but it actually heals ulcers. And aspirin actually causes 24,000 Americans to die each year. Aspirin lowers our vitamin B6, folic acid, and vitamin C levels, leading to homocysteine, which can cause a heart attack. So an aspirin may prevent a stroke, but it can increase heart disease and does and death. Whereas spices strengthen the heart and thin the blood. Vitamin K does the same. According to University of Miami, Columbia University, published in the Journal of the American Heart Association, researchers studied a radically diverse group of older individuals and found that having more ideal cardiovascular health factors was associated with better brain processing speed at the study's start and less cognitive decline 6 years later. So let's get this in perspective. If you eat a healthy diet, if you keep your blood pressure normal, if you lower your high cholesterol, if you keep your blood sugar normal, if you keep your weight normal, if you engage in really good physical activity, you will have a healthier heart. As a result of having a healthier heart, you're going to have a healthier brain. That's an interesting study. So when you help your heart, you're helping your brain. And that's what this study was about. Good. So how do we have a healthy heart? Well, according to Johns Hopkins University, a 10-year follow-up study, 6,000 people who underwent heart CT scans suggest that coronary artery calcium, if it's elevated, that's really bad. It puts you at a greater risk, not only for heart and vascular disease, but also cancer, chronic kidney disease, and chronic obstructive pulmonary disease. This was published in the Journal of the American College of Cardiology and Cardiovascular Imaging. So, how do we keep this calcium out of our arteries? Well, it's relatively simple. Stop drinking coffee. Coffee leaches calcium. Most people are not aware of that. So, more of the coffee you drink, the more likely you are to have osteoporosis and thinning of the bones. It also is a diuretic. So you're going to have the body taking very important minerals, including selenium that helps prevent cancer, and iron, which can lead to anemia, and other nutrients, and it leaches them out of the body. It also is highly acidic. So therefore, you're more likely to be in pain. So that's one way. Another way is to make sure that you're getting a lot of green juices. And the two superstars would be chlorella and spirulina. They help to heal the epithelium, and that's what the calcium attaches to when there are cuts and scrapes in there. So a healthier epithelium, the lining of your arteries, and the more green juices you drink, the less coronary calcium you're going to have. Also, make sure you're getting adequate magnesium equal at least to calcium. Then we're going to look at findings on the Harman's hypothesis from the Spanish National Cancer Research Center, published in Nature's Communications. And here's what it says. Quote, an article appearing in the current issue of Nature Communications supports the oxidative hypothesis of aging submitted by Denham Harman in 1956, which blames much of what we call aging on free radical damage. The hypothesis has recently all but been dismissed by some individuals. However, it remains obvious that oxidative stress is involved in aspects of aging and age-related disease, if not its sole cause. And then it goes in to explain this. Let me explain it, and I'll tell you why I believe it's absolutely accurate. When we exercise, we're doing good things, as I mentioned many times. We're increasing the detoxification mechanisms in our liver. We are supporting a more regular heart rhythm and lowering the beats per minute. So let's say that right now, your heart, if you took your pulse for 60 seconds, your heart is beating at about 80 beats per minute. But if you were to exercise regularly and you got it down to 60 beats per minute, which is really good, 60 and below is outstanding, you've added about 15 years onto the lifespan of your heart. And the body does not die all at once. The body dies in pieces, organ by organ, because every organ, the brain, the eyes, the lungs, the heart, the liver, the kidneys, the eyes are not an organ, but they're essential components of our body. When they no longer are able to maintain their vitalism, you end up with blindness or some degree of blindness. So that's why we're confused. When someone has Alzheimer's, they may look physically fine on the outside, and a lot of their organs may be okay, but their brain isn't. So that's why everything that we can do to slow down the oxidative stress, the oxygen that's impacting our cells, the longer that system will live. So exercise helps increase muscle strength, burns inner cell fat, keeping the body mass index lower, which means less likelihood of heart attack or cancers and diabetes. But the other side of that, those are all good, is you create oxidative stress, and lots of it. Now, because a lot of athletes were not willing to learn that in this moment you may be fast, you may be strong, you may be the best marathoner in the world. In fact, I once had a conversation with Bill Rogers, and he was arguably one of the great marathoners, and he won, I think, 4 New York City marathons. Greta White's won, I think, 9 or 10, and I had the conversation with her as well, and he was eating donuts, and he said, "It doesn't matter what I eat." I said, "But it does, but not today. There'll become a time when it will," and that's what we see. We see a lot of athletes. In fact, I've always had this dream of being able at some point to open a center in the country for retiring athletes and see them spend a year there every day going through the most advanced anti-aging therapy, stem cell therapy, and everything that we know, which is a lot, that can slow down reverse damage, but it's a completely disciplined program. And then reverse the aging of their body. So instead of having to retire because they're 39 or 40, like Peyton Manning, and having a beat-up body, you suddenly have a rejuvenated body. So if you want to continue in the sport, you could, no matter what the sport. And I believe that we could extend the lifespan of athletes substantially. Right now, it's a lot about the drugs. It's a lot about the power weightlifting. But if you look at the diets of most athletes, they're an abomination, creating oxidative stress. So in the moment they're in, they may bulk up, they may be fast or strong, but inevitably not only will they lose that, but they'll prematurely age and die. So what we have to understand is that any time you create oxidative stress, you must have a compensating factor. What do I mean? With a natural living, running, and walking club, and we've trained nearly 29,000 athletes who've done the New York City Marathon. Every single one completed it. In fact, there are photographs up on my website where just some of the meetings in Central Park on a Saturday, we had 500 people showing up. We would have enormous amount of people in different races. Some of the great athletes in America, in the world history, came from our club. Sam Skinner, Louise Nottage, Queenie Thompson, Thelma Wilson, many, Frank Gallo, we have a lot. In any case, one of the things we did is that we would do biochemistries and blood workups during marathon training. And as you were doing long miles, like going out for a 20-mile run, we would see that before the run, the body was flooded with antioxidants that trap the free radicals that are created by the oxidative stress that's created by the running. And then after the workout, take more antioxidants, specific ones, that are really good at turning down. There's some now we didn't have at that time, but cytokine quenchers, they're called, which will grab these inflammatory markers and bring them down. So as long as you are compensating for your workouts and exercise by taking your vitamin C, vitamin E, tocotrienols, coenzyme Q10, zinc, these are very important, NADH, PPQ, and you're able then to benefit from the exercise but not be harmed by the oxidative stress. That's the key. And that's what Harmon was telling us. And people just didn't understand it. And you can understand, how can you say that exercising regularly can actually speed up your death process? But it's actually true. I'll give you one final example of this. Every morning when I would go out to do my workouts in Center Park around the reservoir, there'd be this guy. And he'd be running. I'd be on the reservoir. He'd be on the lower bridle path where the horses run. And he would run at the same pace, exactly a six-minute mile. He wasn't 6:05 or 5:50. He was 6 minutes. And he would run 9 miles every morning, 7 days a week. And when you're running out in the park, you're always going to socialize with people. You know, you talk because you're doing a long run. And he didn't race. He never raced. He just did it because he loved exercising. And I had some conversation. I said, you realize you're creating massive oxidative stress, and that's going to prematurely age your muscles and your legs. He said, well, that's kind of nonsense. So about a week later, I saw him again. He said, hey, by the way, I talked to some physicians, friends of mine. They said, that's crazy talk. That's just stupid. I said, okay. I said, but if you ever get to a point where you're finding that you're prematurely aging your cells and you want to reverse that or slow it down, just let me know and I'll be happy to provide a protocol. Okay, it never happened. So then we jump ahead 10 years. I hadn't seen him in a long time. And I'm walking out of a film at Lincoln Center. There he is. And we start to chat. And I said, what you been up to? And he said, well, everything's good, except my running. I said, what? He said, I can't run. He says, I haven't run in 5 years. I said, why? He said, I go out to run. My muscles just, I've had every test there is, and there's nothing wrong with me. But I just can't run anymore. My muscles don't let me, you know, I go out for a slow jog for like 3 miles. Then my legs are exhausted. And I said, do you remember a long time ago I mentioned that you can prematurely age your muscles if you don't compensate? He says, yeah. He said, I thought about that a lot. And I said, but you took the word of the doctors instead of doing something preventatively. Well, there's nothing now that he could do that I'm aware of except stem cells. However, that same principle applies to everyone. If you're exercising and you're not taking antioxidants, you will prematurely age your body. Will you benefit from the exercise directly? Yes. Will you be harmed by the exercise directly? Yes. That confuses people. How can I benefit and be harmed? Well, you're benefiting by burning fat, detoxifying, creating de-stress hormones, and lowering your heart rate, improving your blood pressure. But on the other hand, you're prematurely aging the whole system that's creating that. Unless you compensate. That's why I created this concept called the laws of compensation, which means that any time in life, and this is for everything, not just exercise, any time in life we have overdone anything, you must compensate by exceeding that in its opposite. So if you overworked, give yourself happy time, break time. Love your family, love your relationship, love your pet time. And don't just squeeze it in and then get back to work, because then you're living out of balance. Irrespective of what you think the short-term goals are to you, you'll pay a price. Now, so that was the Harmon concept. Also, from the Mayo Clinic, how do we cut out the carcinogens in our French fries? Well, we know that French fries, done as most people would eat them, deep fried, and potato chips are the same way. It's acrylamides. Quote from the Mayo Clinic, acrylamide is a chemical formed when an amino acid reacts with sugar. That's according to the medical director of the Mayo Clinic's Healthy Living Program. Quote, it's been demonstrated as causing cancer in animals and is classified as a reasonably anticipated to be a carcinogen in humans, end quote. So, when you eat French fries, when you eat anything that's been browned, you're eating an acrylamide. And the key is that there's only two ways of stopping this. A, stop eating them, or B, you can actually put your potatoes in an oven at a low temperature where you don't brown them, but you cook them well enough and then add seasoning so it tastes like a French fry, but it's not unhealthy. And a lot of people are using food dehydrators where they dehydrate the food up to about 120 degrees, and that way it gives you the benefit of that warm, cooked sensation for mouthfeel and taste, but you haven't caused any acrylamide or cancer-causing agents. It's still a living food. That would be the answer. Also, taking chloroform vitamin C afterwards. And also from the University of Missouri, reducing inflammation and feeling better could be as close as your next meal. Quote, out-of-control inflammation leads to worsening arthritis, conditions, poor health, and the risk of many types of chronic diseases, cardiovascular disease, and cancers. So says the professor at the University of Missouri. So what to do about it? Well, it's very simple here. He simply says you have to get rid of those things that create inflammation. And you have to use things that can tap it down, such as, he's suggesting, the omega-3 fatty acids. Well, there's your walnuts and almonds and avocados, your good, healthy oils, flaxseed oil, hemp seed oil. These are all good oils. And if you're going to have a fish, the one fish to have for the healthy oils, the healthy fats, would be sardines. And, of course, coconut is great as well. And olive oil is terrific. So those are the suggestions. Now, here are two things that I found very interesting when I was reading them today, so I wanted to share them with you. This is from Summer Allen and Jeremy Adam Smith from The Greater Good, and it says, I have the article posted on my website. It says, How Happy Brains Respond to Negative Things. Quote, you drop a glass while making breakfast. You get stuck in traffic on your way to work. Your boss yells at you for being late. Congratulations. You're having a bad morning. It happens to everyone at one time or another. But how we react to the bad things in life reveals a lot about our brains. It might seem to go without saying, but people with sunnier dispositions are better able to regulate their emotions than people with gloomier personalities who are more likely to be thrown by unpleasant events. Why is this? There are several possibilities. One is that happier people wear metaphorically rose-colored glasses that allow them to focus on positive things and filter out negative ones. Another possibility is that happier people are just better at savoring the good things, allowing them to lift their mood while still seeing the bad. Why does this question matter? Because of its implications for the way you view your life. Is it better to ignore the negatives and setbacks altogether, or to strengthen your ability to zero in on the good without glossing over the bad? One way to test these hypotheses is to look at activity in the amygdala, a small almond-shaped brain region in people with different emotional styles. For years, neuroscientists have thought of it as the primitive fear center of the brain, always on the lookout for potential threats. In some people, increased amygdala activity has been linked to depression and anxiety. However, less is known about how the amygdala responds to positive stimuli and how this activity might relate to feelings of positive emotions. That's what psychologist William Cunningham at the University of Toronto and Princeton Universities are exploring with their colleagues. Then it goes on to talk about what is the amygdala and what how this actually works. Now, here's my takeaway on this, and here's what I'll share with you on this. They are partially correct. They have part of the principle. We now can do with brain mapping, we can show how our responses to any stimuli, positive or negative, not only are in our brain, but are wired. And that brings in what they didn't mention, which is the epigenetics. The epi, larger over, view areas of life, meaning the environment you're in, the people you associate with, the quality of your relationship, the quality of your work, all of that impacts you. So if you're working at a job you don't like that doesn't honor your real desires, your brain will not function the same as someone who's doing the work that they love to do, even if that means they have to make sacrifices in other areas of life, like maybe not having the financial security to buy the things they were taught create happiness. But the question is, would you rather be happy doing something that honors you and your life and harmonize that? Or would you rather compromise to maintain financial security or some form of stability so that you don't have to constantly worry about what comes from not having what you're conditioned to believe you need to feel enough in your own life? Both of those show up in the brain. So what this study was showing is half the equation, meaning if you're wired to believe that everything is insecure and therefore your needs dominate, so you're going to make you the center of every conversation and what you need the center of every effort, then anything at all that happens that in any way, correctly or incorrectly, represents a threat to your security, emotional security, relationship security, you're going to overreact to. You're going to be on pushing five-alarm fire alarm constantly. You're going to be over-diligent, hypersensitive. So any thought, any word, any gesture, no matter how innocent, you're going to misperceive it in your brain epigenetically, and you're going to start reacting to it. Now, how you react depends upon your conditioning. Some people react by becoming depressed, others by becoming anxious, some by going into panics. Some people by lashing out, by blaming, yelling, screaming, rage, defensiveness. But if you're a person who is happy with yourself and your life, you'll simply say, okay, this didn't work. It's okay. It's just information, and I'll process it without over-emoting. That's the healthy way of doing it. Then you can retrain your amygdala, and in effect, you can recreate, rewire your brain chemistry to not react, but to use reason. And that, I believe, is going to be one of the most important single areas of the future. And finally, this from Psychology Today, from Dr. Joe Herbert, an article entitled Stress Interferes with the Rhythm of Life. Now, I'll explain why this matters. Because anytime you're disrupting daily rhythms, there's always a consequence for the brain. The whole of life is locked into a rhythm. It's a slow-motion camera focused on any road will reveal two surges in traffic, one in the morning, the other in the evening. We call them rush hours. But they're really a reflection of the way that our lives are organized. Underlying this is the way we alternate periods of sleep and wakefulness. This, in turn, is closely linked to the occurrences of day and night. Anyone who travels knows the effect of disturbing these rhythms. Jet lag stops your sleeping when you should, alters your mood and interpersonal relations, makes it difficult to think clearly and effectively, and generally degrades the quality of life. But only for a few days. Luckily, we recover and go back to our usual selves. Were it to last for, say, several weeks, our lives would be disrupted and we would almost certainly seek medical advice. body rhythms are controlled by a clock in the brain. This is called the SCN. And this is a very powerful self-regulating organism. It lies just behind the eyes, which reflects the fact that light controls it. Left to itself, it would generate a rhythm that would be approximately, but not accurately, 24 hours. So it's a self-sustaining clock. I'm sure many people listening right now have, without an alarm clock, you wake up at a certain time every day, and there's a certain time you get tired. That's this clock. And one of the important functions of this clock is to generate a daily rhythm of cortisol, the hormone from the adrenals. Now, cortisol is normally at its highest early in the morning and gradually drops quite low levels in the evening, rising again during the latter part of the night. And the cortisol rhythm has an essential function. It synchronizes many of the clocks in other parts of the body. So they all adapt a 24-hour rhythm. Importantly, they have different peaks and troughs relative to the time of day, so your body prepares itself for the various events, themselves usually periodic, that can happen as each day passes, for example, mealtimes. Stress can disrupt the usual daily pattern of cortisol. And this is particularly likely to happen if the stress is persistent or unpleasant or threatening and difficult to predict or control. Just imagine being a vet in Afghanistan or any of the other countries. You no longer have a rhythm of life because your cortisol is constantly on alert. You're out of body rhythm, and hence you frequently go through fatigue, and as a result, those 10 cups of coffee or the Dramamine or the amphetamines. Then you have this big crash, and then depression, complete exhaustion, and anxiety, insecurity, and then the doc puts you on the psychiatric meds, and frequently then suicide, 23 per day, every day of the year. So for someone who suddenly has their rhythms changed by your routine, by work, by commutes, by relationships, and even the anticipation of an argument, the anticipation of someone dominating a situation at work or at home or in school, can throw off your clock. Just something to let you know that stress is a killer. So that you should be seeking out a place in life where you are able to cope and able to feel at ease, at peace. And think of how many people live in a city like New York who cannot afford it. It's been made prohibitively expensive by just greed. And then they adapt to it. Anytime you adapt to an environment that is unhealthy and stressful, it's maladaptation. You will then readapt your brain to the amygdala. You will then adapt your cortisol. You'll be more harsh, more intemperate, more quick to go volatile in an emotion, because you're not in a peaceful, relaxing, non-threatening environment. So ask yourself, is it worth it? Today, is it worth it? I just read the latest statistic that 49% of all the people living in New York are living near the poverty level. We never see them. We don't focus on them. My brother helped and ran the organization for decades for small businesses. He told me the numbers of how many people used to work for small businesses, how many small businesses have closed up. Over 300,000 businesses closed up, representing millions of workers. Did anyone care? No. But the people and their families did, but not the politicians taking money from the landlords, creating the artificial real estate commercial bubble. And so imagine staying in an environment, but adapting to it, working two jobs because you're not making enough. You adapt to that. You pay a price. Reconsider adaptation. Let's take a break and we'll come right back. Nice to have you with us, everyone. We were warned 60 years ago, thereabouts, that we should pay attention. We didn't. Even today, the vast majority of Americans are not paying attention to what's going on right in front of them. Listen up to these very prophetic words.
Secrecy is repugnant in a free and open society. And we are, as a people, inherently and historically opposed to secret societies, to secret oaths, and to secret proceedings. We decided long ago that the dangers of excessive and unwarranted concealment of pertinent facts far outweighed the dangers which are cited to justify it. Even today, there is little value in opposing the threat of a closed society by imitating its arbitrary restrictions. Even today, there is little value in ensuring the survival of our nation if our traditions do not survive with it. And there is very grave danger that an announced need for increased security will be seized upon by those anxious to expand its meaning to the very limits of official censorship and concealment. That I do not intend to permit to the extent that it's in my control. And no official of my administration, whether his rank is high or low, civilian or military, should interpret my words here tonight as an excuse to censor the news, to stifle dissent, to cover up our mistakes, or to withhold from the press and the public the facts they deserve to know. For we are opposed around the world by a monolithic and ruthless conspiracy that relies primarily on covert means for expanding its sphere of influence, on infiltration instead of invasion, on subversion instead of elections, on intimidation instead of free choice, on guerrillas by night instead of armies by day. It is a system which has conscripted vast human and material resources into the building of a tightly knit, highly efficient machine that combines military, diplomatic, intelligence, economic, scientific, and political operations. Its preparations are concealed, not published. Its mistakes are buried, not headlined. Its dissenters are silenced, not praised. No expenditure is questioned, no rumor is printed, no secret is revealed. No president should fear public scrutiny of his program, for from that scrutiny comes understanding, and from that understanding comes support or opposition, and both are necessary. I am not asking your newspapers to support an administration, but I am asking your help in the tremendous task of informing and alerting the American people. For I have complete confidence. And the response and dedication of our citizens whenever they are fully informed. I not only could not stifle controversy among your readers, I welcome it. This administration intends to be candid about its errors. For as a wise man once said, an error doesn't become a mistake until you refuse to correct it. We intend to accept full responsibility for our errors, and we expect you to point them out when we miss them. Without debate, without criticism, no administration and no country can succeed, and no republic can survive. That is why the Athenian lawmaker Solon decreed it a crime for any citizen to shrink from controversy. And that is why our press was protected by the First Amendment, the only business in America specifically protected by the Constitution, not primarily to amuse and entertain, not to emphasize the trivial and the sentimental, not to simply give the public what it wants, but to inform, to arouse, to reflect, to state our dangers and our opportunities, to indicate our crises and our choices, to lead, mold, educate, and sometimes even anger public opinion. This means greater coverage and analysis of international news. For it is no longer far away and foreign, but close at hand and local. It means greater attention to improved understanding of the news, as well as improved transmission. And it means, finally, that government at all levels must meet its obligation to provide you with the fullest possible information outside the narrowest limits of national security. And so it is to the printing press, to the recorder of man's deeds, the keeper of his conscience, the courier of his news, that we look for strength and assistance, confident that with your help, man will be what he was born to be, free and independent.
John F. Kennedy, talking about the military-industrial spy complex. Today it's worse. Examples. The National Security Agency's domestic spying continues more than ever before. The first public description of Stellar Wind, its massive domestic spying program, which has the capacity to intercept trillions of domestic electronic communications of Americans, your emails, your phone calls, your internet activities, and has been doing so. That Stellar Wind gave the National Security Agency warrantless access to telecommunications companies. They were cooperating with all the national agencies on spying, all your billing records, everything. And they were doing over 1.5 billion calls every 24 hours. And after 9/11, all the wraps came off the National Security Agency, and they decided to, between the White House and the NSA and the CIA, they decided to eliminate the protections that Kennedy was just speaking of. And hence, we do not have a free press, not even in the alternative media. And in fact, it is now known that the National Security Agency has intercepted an estimated 15 to 20 trillion electronic transactions. They know everything about every person, and they even want more. In fact, it's gotten so bad, according to WikiLeaks from the Activist Post, that WikiLeaks published some documents that show the National Security Agency spied on multiple world leaders on behalf of oil companies. The documents reveal that the National Security Agency spied on the private meetings of world leaders like UN Chief Ban Ki-moon and German Chancellor Angela Merkel and other European leaders. And everything they said was given back to the big oil companies, so they knew what their positions were on climate change and whether they'd be impacted. And quote, we previously published Hillary Clinton's orders that U.S. diplomats were to steal the Secretary General's DNA. The U.S. Government has signed agreements with the U.N. that it will not engage in such conduct against U.N., let alone its Secretary General. It'll be interesting to see the U.N.'s reaction. By the way, there was no reaction. Why isn't Hillary Clinton asked, why would you think you had the power to steal someone's DNA, including the head of the U.N.? But it happened. This is important because now we're being told that we must give all of our control over our lives. We must militarize the police. We must have zero tolerance in schools because of society can put all of its energy into protecting itself. Okay, let's take a look at the statistics. I've collected the statistics, and here are the actual statistics. And this is official. This is the International Classification of Disease 10th Revision. And in the United States, you're looking at heart disease, 596,000 dead. And then malignant neoplasms, 575,000. Chronic lower respiratory disease, big drop down, 143,000. And then it goes down to accidents, Alzheimer's. And on this list, you don't have terrorist attacks, but I did find a list that does. And let me show you the comparison. During World War II, from 1939 to 1945, 61 million people died. That's 1 in 221 people. Cancers in the United States in 1 year, 560,000. That's 1 in 540 Americans died. The traffic accidents, 34,000. That's 1 in 8,000 people died. Homicides, 14,000, that's 1 in 22,000 people died. And then we have the international terrorism. And this is from 1975 to 2003, 13,000. That's 1 in 12 million, 500,000. Or to put it simply, you have a greater chance of dying in your bathtub, 1 in 950,000, or being struck by lightning twice in a year than you do of dying of terrorism. And yet the money goes to terrorism, not to heart disease, not to cancer, not to preventing illnesses, not to rebuilding our cities, not to providing education, quality education for all, or medical health care for all. It goes to what motivates us by fear. That's how successful they've been in controlling the message. This is from Professor Paul Craig Roberts. Quote, Washington has a long history of massacring people. For example, the destruction of the Plains Indians by the Union war criminals, Sherman and Sheridan, and the atomic bombs dropped on Japanese civilian populations by Washington has progressed from periodic massacres to full-time massacres. From the Clinton regime forward, massacring of civilians has become a defining characteristic of the United States. Washington is responsible for the destruction of Yugoslavia and Serbia, Afghanistan, Iraq, Libya, Somalia, and part of Syria. Washington has enabled Saudi Arabia's attack on Yemen, Ukraine's attack on its former Russian provinces, and Israel's destruction of Palestine and the Palestinian people. The American state murders so many people. It goes on rampages through the Middle East and North Africa and was enabled by the Europeans who provided diplomatic and military cover for Washington's crimes. Today, the Europeans are suffering the consequences. They are there, overrun by millions of refugees from Washington's wars. The German women who claim to have been raped by the refugees can blame their chancellor, who's a Washington puppet, for enabling the carnage from which refugees were fleeing to Europe. Well, and that's, when you look at it, that's how it works. Your thoughts on the why you believe, here's my question, why do you believe that the average American, the vast majority of Americans, choose to be clueless about what we've become as a nation? A totalitarian regime run by oligarchs, that is indisputable. Fascism, where government and the private public sector works together, never at our advantage, that's a given. Why are we clueless? Your thoughts on TalkBack, 888-874-4888. I want to take a moment as you're calling in, and we're going to go to your calls here. I want to just share a couple of thoughts. Tomorrow, I will not be on my noon show that I've been on for nearly 40 years here on WBAI, our sister station, New York, because the station management has chosen to replace that show and its audience. I had hoped that the station manager and program director would come forward and simply explain what their motives are, and whoever they replace this with, and they have a person, my hope is that the station continues to succeed, that it gains a new audience, and that audience is able to continue to help. But why take your most successful show and the largest audience off? At the very least, share that information with the audience, because otherwise you're going to alienate the audience. In 2004, when that same audience, which was the largest audience in the history of Pacifica on any station, was taken off abruptly without comment, 47% of the entire station's audience left and never came back. I hope that we look at the larger picture, protecting BAI going forward. But as of this week, there has been a movement that has now come out of the shadows and is actually at the official Pacifica National Board. They're suggesting, putting forth a proposal for the liquidation of WBAI and PFW in Washington, D.C. And this is Pacifica's CFO, Chief Financial Officer, is submitting a plan to restructure, sell, or liquidate WBAI. I believe the listeners need to know this, and they should not be kept in the dark on this. I have given you some warnings that this would be happening. And I believe that we should understand that they have their own agenda. Now, does this station need to be changed? You bet. Should we be honoring the audience? and seeing that their premiums are given to them as quickly as possible? Absolutely. But the CFO's statement that indicated that WBAI will be restructured or sold, look at the different reasons why. What is their purpose in this? Is it to save the station, to make it better, to get it back to its original mission, to rebuild its audience? Or is it simply to take advantage of it? I do not know their motives. I have not been invited into any conversation with anyone on this. I just know that they're moving forward as quickly as possible. From our perspective, everything humanly possible to do, from every kind of fund drive and appearance and lectures, free lectures and screenings where all money goes to the station, we have done that. But it is not enough. The station is deep in debt to the Empire State Building and to Pacifica. And this needs to be explained, and complete transparency of our financial situation should be shared with the audience. Also, I want to thank the people, the volunteers and others who've gone out of their way to try to save the station, those individuals who have contributed as volunteers. I even just read recently where a person came in, was willing to pay for the mailing of the premiums out to the listeners, and no one got back to them in several weeks. We thank that person for wanting to help the station. But at some point, the station has to change what it's doing, how it's doing it, to put first and foremost quality programming, accountable programming, and quality management and accountable management, and see that if a person calls in and gives a premium, that that premium is mailed out in an expeditious manner, so that we do not face the prospect, as we do now, of liquidating WBAI in New York within 60 days. They're putting this proposal forward. And WPFW in Washington within 60 days. So that time has finally come, and there is no more time. I will be doing my regular program tomorrow on the Progressive Radio Network at noon. I have a phenomenal show lined up. If people would like to go there and tune in, you're welcome to join me. You can listen over the telephone, as we had over 55,000 minutes last week of people listening, plus all the people came directly over the internet. The phone number to listen to tomorrow at noon is 712-775-6850. 712-775-6850. Or you can continue to listen to the new program here on BAI, and hopefully you will find it empowering and you can support it and continue to support the station. To help those listeners who have not received their premiums, we are putting together a program that will hopefully get you your premiums, no matter what show you pledged for. Doesn't have to be mine. Call my office at 646-926-5422, and we will we'll try to get you your premium through our efforts. But we have to know which premium, how long it's been. There's a whole lot of premiums out there that have not been delivered, but we do want to thank the volunteers, the volunteer coordinators who have come in, who've tried, but there has to be a completely different system to make it work. Now let's go over and say hello to Ali from Brooklyn. Hi, Ali, your turn.
Oh, good afternoon. How are you doing, Dr. Noel?
Good.
Okay, I have figured out exactly what's causing the malaise and the lack of interest on the part of the masses of Americans as to American foreign policy and even domestic policy. See, what you have to understand is this country was set up by Freemasons, starting with George Washington, James Madison, all of them, Freemasons. And this Masonic order has tens of millions of members throughout the United States, Masons, Shriners, Eastern Stars, etc. Now, all these organizations are not secret, but what they do is secret. Everybody knows about these organizations, but they don't know what they do. What they do is control their members. They're in key positions in the federal, state, and city government all over this country. They're in key positions in business. Hillary Clinton, Eastern Star. What's the other guys running for office? Donald Trump, a Mason. You see, so when you have all of these people and they get orders from the top to dumb down not only themselves, but everybody around them. And that's why America could do almost anything it wants and nobody say anything. They're all under, under order.
Ali, I appreciate you calling in and sharing your comments. Just 2 days ago, I had an opportunity to counsel a Mason. And I asked them, I said, I've always been curious about what are your teachings at your lodge and what do you believe in? And it was interesting because he had many of the same views I'm sure you would have, very socially progressive. And so where historically, clearly there have been individuals through their different lodges, guilds, groups, have sought an agenda that served their interest. It would be too simplistic from my perspective to suggest that we're eating bad foods because of Masons, that we are voting for sociopaths because of Masons, that we refuse to acknowledge a Green Party or anyone who thinks independent of the mainstream as Masons, who realizes there are alternative media other than the Masons. In fact, we have Masons who are very progressive. So I would ask you to reflect on the actual historical context and without making it so broad-based today that that is the excuse you give for the inaction on so many other people's parts. But again, our forum is always open to a diversity of ideas, and I thank you very much, Ali, for calling in and sharing yours. We have time for one more. Let's say hello to Al from Long Island. Hi, Al. Your turn. You're on the air. Please speak up.
In my opinion, one of the biggest difficulties is the indifference of the American public towards our foreign policy mistakes and atrocities. And I believe that one of the major causes is the failure of our clergy, because the great majority of Americans attend religious services, many of them on a weekly basis throughout their lives, where they hear sermons which are said by clergymen. And as children, they attend, Americans attend Sunday school or Hebrew school or whatever. And our clergy has failed to awaken the best motives and our best ideas and our people. And I just want to close with one more thing. In 1943, Pope Pius XII, in a radio broadcast over Vatican Radio at the height of World War II, said, "Every man has the stamp of God."
Well, if it was Pope Pius XII, he should reevaluate what he was doing by turning over over 4,000 individuals to be captured and executed by the Nazis. He worked with the Nazis, and he had a very sordid history, including allowing the Vatican Railroad. So Martin Bormann and many others, including Eichmann, were able to get out of Germany because of that. That said, look at Louis Farrakhan. Do you know of any other head of a religion in the United States that is outspoken on the issues of government policy, on our intemperate way of and violent way of dealing with other nations? Would you agree with everything? He says no. But on certain issues, he has. The Berrigan brothers, two Catholic priests, they used to eat in a restaurant I had at the Fertile Earth up on the Upper West Side, which was the gathering place for all the social and anti-war activists. Near Columbia University, they represented the best of what thousands of nuns and priests did. But did the official clergy, the church, the hierarchy, the cardinals, the bishops? No. Bishop Romero, yes. There have always been members, the Lutherans, Presbyterians, the Unitarians, the Baptists, who've come forward. But your larger argument, I absolutely think you're right on the spot here. I believe that if we used the religions of the world to demand peace and to stop intervening in other people's lives, to stop the coups in Honduras, which we were behind, and the destabilization of the Chavez government, which we were behind, the invasion of Castro's Cuba, Bay of Pigs, which we were behind, and hundreds of regime changes throughout history, and said no more. Let us at least put people in positions of power who have spiritual values, irrespective of their religion. And that's one of the things that Robert Kennedy and John F. Kennedy were trying to do. They were trying to, initially, they were neo-colonialists. They were free trade opportunists. They were adventurers. They did cause, through William Colby, the destruction of the Diem brothers, the assassination, Mamba and several others. But then they turned it around and wanted to get out of this. And I believe that's one of the reasons they were assassinated. They wanted to get us out of Vietnam. So could religion play a major role if they brought their congregations to a point of fully educating them? Yes. Could those same congregations watch films and be given lectures on the dangers of the American diet to their congregation? Yes. I did it with the Seventh-day Adventist Church up in White Plains. And we were able to turn the entire congregation's health around, but it didn't spread to the other Seventh-day Adventist churches. I wished it had of. If we did it in one, we could do it in others. But the only way that worked was for the pastor and the entire congregation to agree that they wanted a different outcome for their health. They wanted health and vitality. Could we do it also if we took it from health and vitality to protecting our children by not drugging them or not labeling them? Yes, we could. So you could change anything politically in the United States if you had a consensus of the religious leaders. And I'm not talking about the Jerry Falwells or the Swaggerts and some of the others who are just opportunists. I'm talking about the rank and file. You could make an enormous difference. I believe that is your larger message. But let us not forget those religious leaders who have taken upon themselves to educate, to march, to be arrested, to be in the forefront. There have been many, and we must always acknowledge their efforts. Thank you very much, Al from Long Island, and thank all of you. I'm Gary Nall. Have a nice day. Coming up now, Chris Hedges will be the guest on Utrice Leeds program. Like I love you.